Call to order the regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, May 26, 2026. Ask Councilman Longo to read our mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Longo. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Mr. Longo?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Chastain?
Here.
Mr. Tungo?
Here.
Mr. Tudico?
Here. Do you have a quorum? Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I welcome all those in chamber, those online, Zoom. Welcome to the, so we've got quite a crowd here this evening. Thank you for being here. Our next item is the mayoral proclamation declaring June 2026 as a workshop safety awareness month. Whereas the National Safety Council designates each June as National Safety Month to promote and encourage health and safety in the workplace and communities. Whereas the City of Unalaska is a city of industry, comprised of diverse business and workplaces, and whereas many accidents in the workplace are preventable, and implementing health and safety programs is vital to employee safety and can improve business operation and performance, which contributes to the local economy. And whereas workplace safety requires cooperation of employees, businesses, and all levels of government, as well as the community. Whereas promoting a workplace safety and health practices in Unalaska businesses and endeavors worthy of support for the City of Unalaska. Now, therefore, I, Vincent M. Tudikoff, Sr., Mayor, City of Unalaska, do hereby announce and proclaim to all businesses and citizens that June 1st through the 30th of 2026 is Workplace Safety Awareness Month, and all businesses and citizens are encouraged to promote and encourage safe and healthy work environments. So proclaimed on May 26, 2026. I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Longo. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. Next item on our agenda is the awards and presentations for the fire department personnel. I'd like to call Fire Chief Edward Athney to do the presentations, please.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members, members of the public. One of the greatest honors that a fire chief can have is to recognize their people. But I ask for your indulgence tonight as I defer this honor to an individual whose dedication and motivation most undoubtedly contributed to the success of these four members that we're recognizing tonight. So I'm going to ask Captain David Gibson to join me at the podium.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for being here to celebrate Daniel Peters, Alicia Bass, Damon O'Brien, and Lucy Ortiz of the Unalaska Department.
members and their family please come down to the front to be honored here tonight? Stand up in the front with fire helmets, please. All right, so tonight we gather to recognize something that can't be measured simply in hours, though we know there have been hundreds of them. We are here to honor commitment, sacrifice, and the quiet determination it takes to answer a call that may come at any moment. To the firefighters standing before us, over the past year, you have given your time, your energy, and your focus to something larger than yourselves. You have trained when others have rested. You have studied when others relaxed. You have pushed through fatigue, frustration, and doubt because you understand what was at stake. Earning your black fire helmet is not just a milestone, it is a transformation. That helmet represents trust. It signifies that you are no longer learning from the sidelines. You are ready to step forward, to face heat, smoke, uncertainty, and risk with skill and composure. It tells your fellow firefighters and your community that you are prepared to stand beside them in the most demanding moments. It's a symbol of belonging, responsibility, and courage earned, not given. And alongside that, your EMT patch carries its own profound meaning. It represents the ability to preserve life in its most fragile moments. It means that when someone is hurt, afraid, or in crisis, you have the knowledge and training to make a difference, sometimes in seconds that matter most. That patch is a promise that you will bring care, competence, and compassion whenever you are needed. These achievements do not come easily. They are built on long nights, early mornings, and the willingness to keep going when it would have been easier to stop. They are built on teamwork, on learning to trust one another, and on understanding that no one succeeds alone in this line of work. To the families, friends, and supporters, your role in this journey matters more than words can fully express. Your patience, encouragement, and understanding have made these accomplishments possible. And to our new certified firefighters and EMTs, tonight is a moment to be proud, but it is also the beginning of a greater responsibility. The helmet you wear and the patch on your sleeve will carry expectations, not just from your department, but from every person who depends on you in a moment of need. You have earned your place. You have proven your dedication, and now you can carry forward a tradition defined by service, resilience, and unwavering commitment to others. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for your perseverance. And most importantly, thank you for choosing to serve. Congratulations. The Unalaska Fire Department would probably like to introduce to the community Firefighter EMT Peters, Firefighter EMT Bass, Firefighter EMT Ortiz, and Firefighter EMT O'Brien. Yeah, Jamin is on the phone. Thank you. Firefighter EMT Peters has earned his Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2, State of Alaska EMT 1, and National Registry EMT over the last year. Greg, would you present Daniel with his patch and helmet? Firefighter EMT Bass has earned her Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2 over the last year and came to us as an EMT 3. Firefighter EMT Ortiz has earned her Firefighter 2, EMT 1, and National Registry EMT over the last year. And then Firefighter EMT O'Brien, who's on the phone, has earned his Firefighter 1, State of Alaska EMT 1, and National Registry EMT over the last year. And in his place, his uncle Patrick Bliss is here to accept those. Please accept your black helmets and EMT patches in recognition of your hard work and dedication to the community of Unalaska. Again, it's been a truly honor to work with you all. I am looking forward to continue that work. So thank you for all your hard work. Congratulations.
Thank you. Congratulations to the two firefighters in Unalaska. very much as John Bryce. I have a motion. I'll get back to our agenda. I have a motion to approve the closed minutes of the meetings of May 12th and a special meeting of May 15th, 2026 as presented.
Move to adopt previous meeting minutes of May 12th, 2026 and May 15th, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, seconded by Councilman Chastain. Any objections to accepting the minutes of the previous meetings? During the other meetings, our agenda of minutes are approved. Next on our agenda are reports. First, we have the April financials. I'll turn this over to the acting interim city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. We have the finance director online tonight, and he'll go through the April financials for you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. In your packet, you have a copy of the financial statements. There are a couple items that I wanted to touch on tonight. The first item I want to comment on the general fund revenues. As you can see, we're doing well. The sales tax is right near the budgeted amount. Raw seafood tax is exceeded. And I do expect that in total, we will continue to perform well through the remainder of 2026. I also want to note on the expenditure side that the total expenditures of 71%, looking at the general fund in total, is below where the 10-month benchmark would be at 83%. So we have the double benefit of revenues that exceed budget and expenditures that are below budget. So that's definitely a plus. With respect to the special revenue funds, which is the next page, S. Garland, I just wanted to comment on a couple of them. As you can see, the bed tax, the 1% sales tax is also near the 100% budget, and that goes right in line with the sales tax percentage in the general fund. I did want to note on a couple of the special revenue funds that we are actually below budget, the bed tax and the tobacco tax. And as I've mentioned previously, we are adjusting. You'll see in the budget tonight, we have adjusted the FY 2027 budget amounts for revenue for both the bed tax and the tobacco tax. If you can scroll down just a little bit further, S. Garland, to the bottom of the page. I do want to touch on the sustainability fund simply because it is still new with the city. And as you can see, the month of April was quite a spectacular month for the portfolio's performance, where we had a poor month in March. The April more than exceeded the loss that we had incurred in March. So as of the end of April, our portfolio balance is about $52 million, which is, if you recall, we started at $50 million in the middle of December. Moving on to the proprietary funds, which is the next page, S. Garland. I want to touch on each fund just briefly, really more with respect to whether they are over or under revenues and expenses. The electric fund, as you can see, is at 67% of revenue, so that is below the budget. On the plus side, operating expenses at 78% of budget are also below the budget at amount. For water and wastewater, the next two proprietary funds, we have benefited from exceeding revenue budgets while also under recording expenses. So that gives the double benefit for each of those. And then for solid waste, we're right on target at 83% of budget for revenues through the end of April, while operating expenses are much below the budgeted amount, as you can see. With respect to ports, I believe that'd be the top of the next page, S. Garland. Sports is under, actually, on both. So while we don't have the benefit of exceeding a budget on the revenue side, we are looking to keep costs in line. And from an expense standpoint, we are below budget, which is definitely a good thing. With respect to the airport, we are also under a bit on both. And then finally, for the housing proprietary fund, we are slightly over on revenue and on expenditures. Finally, I wanted to mention the last couple of items, the last couple of pages in the report that you will see. One is the cash report that I continue to provide, and then the other one is the available to appropriate. Our cash position remains strong. So, Scarlett, if you could go to the second to the last page, I think is where I want to go. Sorry, I don't have a packet number for you, a packet page number.
No worries, Jim. Let me just pull the bookmark. Second to the last page, you said.
Of the financial report, sorry. That's okay. It won't take too long to get there. That is the correct page. Thank you. This is the listing of available to appropriate as of May 22nd. At the last meeting, Councilmember Luby requested that we include the bed tax, E911, and tobacco tax. And I do hope that this is what you were looking for in terms of the amount that would be available to appropriate. The way I calculated these just a touch different than the others, simply because these are earmarked for specific purposes. And so the adjustments that I made to those included where we are year to date with respect to budget through the end of April. So what you could see, for example, the bed tax, we have $214,383 to appropriate if a request came our way. The E911 enhancement would be $438.94. And the tobacco tax would be $537,551. The general fund and the 1% sales tax and the proprietary funds all remain the same as last month because we have not recorded any budget amendments. Council has not adopted any budget amendments since that report. And with that, I will turn it over to council if they have any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the report. Are there any questions or comments? Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, thank you. This might be a pretty specific question. Hopefully you can answer it. If not, I'm wondering, you talked about the electric revenue fund and the expenses are a little bit higher. I was wondering how much of an influence has the increase in diesel costs played in these increase in expenses?
I would have to do some research on that, but my understanding of the increase in fuel costs is those are passed along to the customers. And certainly Eric can comment on that more concretely than I can, but I do believe that anytime the fuel prices increase or adjustments are made, the customer either benefits from a lower price or they're paying a little bit more when that fuel price increases.
Okay, so it's not the rate, but it's the COPA.
Correct.
But it's still an expense to us.
It is. But
so
we also
reflected in our total expenses.
It's reflected in the total expenses, but it's also reflected on the revenue side.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further comments or questions from council? The financial, Councilman Tungo.
He is on, sir. Just muted. Mr. Tungle, do you have any questions?
No question. Thank you for the presentation. It's really detailed and it's easy to understand now. So appreciate it. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Further comments? Councilman Booby?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for adding the special funds on there. It is helpful, so appreciate it. And this is very helpful when we need it. So thanks.
I'm glad that we could provide that for you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Luby. Further questions? Financials? Well, thank you, Jim. We'll be talking to you again here later. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Next item is a city manager report. Turn this over to Hebner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just two quick items I wanted to point out to you on the upcoming dates to note. You may have noticed we had a Senator Sullivan visit listed there for this coming Thursday and Friday. We heard on last Friday after this report went out that he is not likely to be coming on that visit, and we haven't received a schedule. So at this time, we do not anticipate him being in town for that visit. And then there was an item that is not listed, which is the 4th of July fireworks. And I just wanted to share with the council and the community that that is scheduled to happen at 11:59 p.m. on July 3rd, going into the 4th. So that's Friday night. And the fireworks themselves are already here, and we've been in communication with the contractor that does the firing, and all of their travel arrangements are made. So we're on track for the 4th of July fireworks. And that's all I had to update you on.
Oh, thank you. Abner, any questions or comments on the city manager report? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, and we'll make sure to get it out to the public that it's going to be the night of the 3rd, morning of the 4th, so people know that too. And then I was curious if, is the city planning anything for the 4th of July after the parade? Is PCR doing anything? Does anybody know if there's going to be any events after the parade happening?
I'm not aware of anything, but the PCR director's here, and I see him walking to the podium.
We're going to do the parade. That's our number one thing to do. And then I think we're going to try to do some the opening of softball. We'll see if that turns out at Kelty Field. But nothing planned like an event or anything like that, or, you know, vendor fair or anything like that.
Okay. I was just curious. A lot of people are always looking forward to something in the afternoon. And I know the Q Tribe used to do it, and then they stopped doing it a couple of years ago. Senior citizens do it. It's tough for the elders to do, and I think people kind of miss it. So it would be kind of nice if we could, you know, if the city could do something, you know, for the 4th of July, you know. I know we do the Heart of Illusions, and that's a lot of work for you guys as well. But it's just something the community really likes to, they all have the 4th of July off. So I will probably be doing something at the wrap. So I will try to do something anyway. Okay, thank you.
The advertising helps. It's 250 years anniversary for the United States, and I think it's important to have something. Appreciate the golf ball. I didn't even go out there and try to hit one, but we'll see. That could be a lot of fun just to watch. All right, thank you. Any further questions for city manager?
The mayor?
Councilman Tungle?
Yeah, just a quick question. With the city manager, is there any more project open that needed to be closed that are in there? Everything is pretty much
yes,
closed.
As far as open projects go, we do have that coming up on an agenda July 14th. We anticipate closing out some projects that are complete and or not moving or whatever. So July 14th, we have that on the agenda. Staff just met last week and discussed those, and we have a plan.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Abner. Appreciate it. Next item is the boards and commission minutes. There'll be no presentation. You do have it near your packet. The first item of committees is a Library Advisory Committee meeting and agendas. February 9th, 2026, and Historic Preservation Commission meeting minutes, March 19th, 2026, and the Planning Commission meeting minutes of March 19th, 2026. Have any questions or comments, contact the city manager or the committee chairman. Next item is community input and announcements. It's time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium and use the microphone and state your name.
Hi, Roger Blakely, PCR director. Have three things today. First is our hiking challenge. Our summer hiking challenge is a great way to explore the beauty of Unalaska and get some solid exercise in while you do it. There's a registration of $5. Participants will receive an exclusive patch, which you can see on this little flyer. And if you've been with us for a long time, you have many patches. We have one for every year. You must have a valid OC land use permit. And each completed hike qualifies for a monthly prize and drawing. It's really fun. The next item is our summer playground program starts June 1st. That's next Monday. K through fifth grade. It will be from 1 to 4 each day. Registration is ongoing right now. And then the last item is our summer lap program. It starts in June, open to all ages. So every 10 laps that you do, you get a punch card and you'll receive a small prize for filling out your 10 laps. And then each punch card goes into a bigger drawing at the end of the program, so that the more laps you do, the more opportunities you get to have to win the grand prize. So come on and swim, enjoy the pool, and we'll see you there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Next.
Good evening, City Council, Mayor. Christy Fassbender, COO at IFHS. Just a couple of announcements. First announcement is that we got our DEA license complete, so we are good to go with the pharmacy, and we should begin work on transitioning from our dispensary to our pharmacy over the next couple of months. We don't have a firm soft opening date, but I'm hoping for October at this point. Also, with that comes that we are asking for the community to join us in voting for our IFHS pharmacy logo. There are two options. They're behind you on the projector. The leadership team has narrowed it down to these two choices, and we're asking for community to go online or to our Facebook page. There's a QR code that you can scan, or you can click the link and vote for which logo that you would prefer to have for your IFHS pharmacy here in Unalaska. That's it.
Hey, thank you. Anyone else in chambers for announcements or comments? City Clerk, do we have anybody on the phone or telephone, Zoom?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we have Mr. Kelty to speak on community input and announcements. Go ahead, Mr. Kelty.
We're not hearing you, Frank.
Mr. Kelty, you can unmute yourself, and we're ready for your community input and announcement.
Hello. Yeah, okay. Do you hear me now, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I do. About time.
Sorry. Sorry about that. I got two, you know, there's two mic keys, one on the bottom, one on the top, and I kept pushing the one on the bottom, which is whatever. Anyway. Just a quick wrap up for A season. We have on Snowcraft still have about 340,000 pounds still to harvest. There's only, I believe, three or four boats still out there, but the season closes by regulation on May 31st. So hopefully they're doing the cleanup of that 300,000 pounds right now. Codfish is still going. We have about 11 million pounds of, a small boat pot cod, but it's slowing down pretty badly, so that might be left on the table for later on, possibly in the fall. We still have about, on federal water cod, there's still about 100 million pounds to harvest. And on June 10th, pollock bee season starts. Incoming flights are going to be full here really shortly as people, harvesters and processors are coming back to town for the start of the bee season. The bee season is 60% of the pollock overall tack, so it's about 735,000 metric tons, which is about 1.6 billion pounds. Of that amount, on Alaska's shoreside plants get 213,000 metric tons, almost 500 million pounds to harvest. We have 65% of the shoreside onshore allocation. So that starts in June 10th. I think that about wraps it up, and thank you very much for the time, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the updates. Keep in contact through the bee season. Thank you. Anyone else on Zoom?
No, sir. Sid.
We'll move to our next item on our agenda. Item 11 is a public comment and on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda if they don't want to wait until it comes up on the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. No one in chambers? Anybody on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir. No one made an indication.
Okay, thank you. Next item is public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set forth for public hearing. Open public hearing at 6:32. Public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-10, adopting the fiscal year 2027 operating and capital budget for the City of Unalaska. Does anyone present wish to speak? City Clerk, were there any written comments submitted, or does anyone on Teams or phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No written comments submitted. If no one in Teams wanted to speak.
Okay, thank you. Public hearing for Ordinance 2026-10 is now closed. 6:33. The next item is the work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into work session, please?
Move to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Luby. Are there any objections? Hearing none, we're in the work session at 6:34 p.m. First item is update on council directives, air service and reliability, resilience, and affordability. I'll turn this over to intern city manager to introduce Hefner.
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to come to the council and provide you with an update on the work that's underway to improve air service reliability for Dutch Harbor. I'm going to cover some information on stakeholder engagement, technical analysis, regional advocacy, and an emerging path forward with meaningful improvements. Next slide. As you recall, back in January, the council gave a directive to the manager to prioritize working with the airlines, ADOT, state, and federal partners, and others to ensure reliable flights for residents of Unalaska and report back to the council. Following that directive, I did some interpretation of that, and I took that to mean engage with aviation partners, including airlines, Alaska DOT and public facilities that manages the airport, other state entities, federal and regional and industry stakeholders. With the goal of trying to identify barriers to affordability, reliability, and resilience, the goal was to develop some actionable, fundable improvements and then report progress back to the council. The initial directive was reliability. I don't think we can address reliability without also considering affordability and resilience. They're very much tied together. And that kind of became clear as I started to look at the current situation. So reliability is the ability of the of our service providers to complete scheduled flights. That's driven by avionics, approach minimums, runway length, and weather visibility. Affordability, the cost of travel for our residents and the workforce coming into the community, which again is influenced by aircraft type, payload limits, and things that drive their operational economics, the cost per passenger coming out here. And then last is resilience, again, ability to maintain that service during inclement weather or other operational disruptions. Avionics plays a role in that as well, our runway margins, different aircraft options. Next slide. Oh, that's the right one. Sorry, you're on it. So as far as approach and strategy, I wanted to focus on solutions that can help to improve our service through a coordinated multi-agency effort. I knew that I needed to bring in some technical expertise. I wanted to focus on achievable improvements and not get distracted by things that we couldn't get funded or couldn't get approved. So avoiding some unproductive and unrealistic options with a priority of safety and cost effectiveness. This matters because the approach focuses our resources on things that are achievable and deliverable and fundable rather than other things that we maybe can't influence, ultimately delivering a benefit to our residents. Next slide. So I mentioned that I was going to need some technical support. I realized that there were some aspects of the aviation industry that I don't fully understand or know the terminology around. And so I've engaged Mr. Dennis Parrish of O&M Aviation Consulting, LLC, and we have him on the phone with us tonight, and I'm going to ask him to briefly introduce himself. This way we can test his microphone, too. Dennis, you can unmute yourself.
Okay. Thank you, Abner. Yes, Dennis Parrish. Pleasure to meet all of you. I think Abner has the information in front of you regarding myself. I've been in aviation a very long time. I'm very familiar with the issues you're dealing with. And you do have some interesting challenges, but I think there's some things that can be done. Perhaps not the we'll see how it goes. We're still digging into this. But I'm Dennis Parrish. Nice to meet all of you.
Thanks, Dennis. And Dennis doesn't like to talk about himself a whole lot, but he's flown into Dutch Harbor as a pilot in the past. He has over 40 years in Alaska aviation. He's on FAA rulemaking committees. He serves on the governor's aviation advisory board. He has deep ties with FAA and DOT and PF folks, National Weather Service. He's the former director of flight operations for ConocoPhillips, and he's actually designed and developed runways and opened new airfields for ConocoPhillips during that time. So a great technical expert for us, and he's been very instrumental in helping to open doors and move some of this progress process along. Next slide. During this process, we've engaged a lot of different people, had a lot of conversations, a lot of meetings. Some of those are listed up above there on the slide for you, from federal to state partners, industry and carriers, our processors, and then other regional partners, the tribe, the OC Corporation, and Aleutians East Borough have all been engaged during this process. It's been a coordinated effort across all different levels of government and industry. We have ongoing collaboration with the Q Tribe, OC, Aleut Corporations, and Aleutians East Borough, as well as our seafood processors. The goal with that coordination is to make sure we have a shared recognition of regional air service challenges, that we're presenting unified messaging to state and federal partners, and that our reliability improvements here in Dutch can benefit the rest of the region as we're a central hub for much of the region. We've also submitted a Small Community Air Service Development Program, SCASDEP grant. That's a U.S. DOT grant. We requested $375,000, and the award for that should be sometime in the fall. That was just submitted this month. If we're awarded, the city match would be $35,000. this would be a coalition, or we sort of formed a coalition with OC, Q Tribe, and Westward Seafoods, all of which signed up to participate in any planning efforts. And they also pledged $5,000 in additional match funds beyond what the city's match would be. That should make our application much stronger. In addition to those, we got letters of support from Pacific Seafood Processors Association and the Aleut Corporation. And the project that we've requested is a study which will quantify the impacts of current air service deficiencies and help us to evaluate options. Really, it's going to provide us a tool to help justify grant funding for any work that may need to be done, and positions us for that. Next slide. We met specifically with Trident. Trident has and other local processors, but Trident specifically hired a consultant to help them quantify the impact of air service challenges and deficiencies on their business. And they shared those findings with myself and with Dennis. And what those, in summary, showed is they have a high volume of seasonal workforce movement, tight timing, a lot of economic loss from delays and cancellations. They're putting people up in hotels for extended time before they can get them out here. Air cargo limitations, which affect their ability to ship fresh and frozen product shipments in an expedient manner. They do, however, estimate that even with small improvements in reliability, will have a big economic impact for them. And the consensus is that these reliability improvements are essential. They also support a multi-track approach where we look at some of the short-term things that we can solve right now while we're still working on future larger improvements. They're the processors' impact strengthen our case, again, for funding, and then also their data frames us as a national economic infrastructure node as opposed to just a local airport. Now the slide that you have on the screen in front of you, one of the core issues that we found is our avionics and approach minimums are a significant barrier to operational efficiency. Currently for Aleutian Airways, they operate under minimums with legacy avionics in their aircraft that requires them to have between a 2,000 and 3,000 foot ceiling, essentially, and between 1.5 and 3 miles of visibility. And as we all know, oftentimes we don't have that, and that's where we see them fly out and turn around and go back to Anchorage or just completely cancel the flight. Meanwhile, they're incurring operational costs for all of that. We do currently for this airport have an RNAV minimum, which is an instrument approach, but it requires different avionics than what are currently in the Saab 2000s. Aircraft that can fly that RNAV approach can come in here with a 500-foot ceiling and 1 mile of visibility. I'll talk a little bit about a future runway extension possibility in just a minute, but with that future runway extension that I'm going to talk about, if that were to happen, it is possible to have an instrument approach that would bring the ceiling all the way down to 350-foot ceiling and a 3/4 mile visibility requirement for aircraft to come in here. That's a significant improvement to the ability to land at our airfield. And the initial estimates are somewhere around 25% to 35% of the flights that couldn't get in here previously would be able to get in here then.
Bowman, I have a question.
Okay, so that's just simplify this for me. So we're talking about the difference between visual flight rules and instrument flight rules.
Yes, that's correct. And not just instrument flight rules, but precision instrument approaches that are designed specifically for an airfield.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, the difference between the RNAV and what Aleutian currently uses, is it difficult to change their systems out? Have they said anything where they could have the RNAV versus what they use now?
I'll ask Dennis to talk a little bit about that for you.
Okay.
Did you catch the question, Dennis?
I did, yes. And if you can hear me, yes. It is, and oddly enough, I pioneered these new avionics into Alaska. And that's not bragging. I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, but it makes a huge difference. And to upgrade an aircraft such as a Saab 2000, you're close to $2 million per aircraft to put those avionics in. It's not just changing out a couple of black boxes. It's completely rewiring, reinstallation of all kinds of new things in the airplane that the aircraft was never designed for originally. It can be done, and Abner's going to get to it, but there may be an aircraft or maybe two showing up in the Aleutian fleet that may have some of these newer avionics, but I'll let Abner get to that. But yes, it's a huge, huge investment to make that change per aircraft.
And with the current avionics, Aleutian can only fly that, that current top one, the larger visibilities and higher ceilings.
Councilman Luby?
So Alaska Airlines uses, I believe it's Horizon as a commuter flight, and they have, I'm not sure what kind of airplane it is. It's a little bit different. They're similar to the Saabs, but a little bit bigger. I think they have two seats. I don't know what they are. Anyway, I'm just curious if those are able to land on our runway as it is, and if they have the RNAV, and if there was a way we could entice them even to come in as well.
If it's okay, I do have a slide that talks about that, and I think it will answer your question in just a minute.
Thanks. Go ahead.
That slide. I wanted to highlight that Aleutian operates in that the space that they operate in, and they operate with a very conservative posture that's safety-driven, and it really is appropriate for the situation here currently. The constraint is the system and not Aleutian. I know it's very easy for people to blame the airline when they can't get in here, but I wanted to point that out. The factors for that are the legacy avionics, which drives us higher minimums. We have limited camera coverage from our weather cameras here, and we have a whole section we'll talk about that in just a minute, but also our terrain and wind environment, and then the short runway, which limits their accelerate and stop limits. Aleutian has been very collaborative with us through this process. They've openly engaged with myself and with Dennis. They've expressed a strong desire to be the strongest link in the chain, which is their slogan. They've shared operational data with us and aircraft performance information, more with Dennis because I don't understand those components anyway. And they've committed to providing additional data as needed to help us support improvements. Their transparency and cooperation has been essential to getting to the point that we're at right now. Next slide. So weather cameras, we actually have three weather camera sites in Alaska currently. Each site has four cameras. Those cameras, unfortunately, they'll provide some limited coverage. There's areas that are missing. There's a specific view down the runway that is not currently available to them when they're doing flight planning and go, no-go decision making in Anchorage with their dispatch confidence and marginal weather. What we have been able to do, or Dennis has been able to do, is find that we and secure funding for three new 360-degree weather cams. Those are funded and scheduled to be installed here, and they'll replace the four cameras each at those three sites. So you'll have one 360-degree view camera at each of those three sites. And then there's been discussion of a fourth camera. It sounds like we have some support on that, but we're waiting for final details on whether that's going to be added or not. If it is, it would be added near one end or the other of the runway and would allow a view directly down the runway to see the approach for the aircraft as they're doing their mission planning. Did I get that correct, Dennis?
Absolutely spot on, Abner. Good. You're doing an excellent brief.
Thank you. All right, next slide. So I wanted to just show you real quick what the cameras look like. There's one that's located up by the FAA equipment on Tundra Drive. Those views there, you see I numbered the angles coming off of the camera point on the right-hand side, and then I numbered the corresponding camera view on a clear day for you to be able to see that. You see the first two look like they kind of join, but then you lose visibility, and you can tell by the pie-shaped cutouts, you don't have any visibility off to the one way, and there's gaps between what each one can see. So you have areas that you're missing on those cameras. Next slide. And then this one is haystack site. Again, four cameras. Those provide a little better overlap of coverage, but there's still not a great view of the runway because it's so far away. Next slide. And so the last site is the Ballyhoo site, and that's actually on the kind of northeast end of Ballyhoo, as you can see in the picture there. And there's really some big gaps in there, but it's trying to cover the approach corridors and those sorts of things is what those cameras are trying to do. So the next slide that we're going to pull up actually is an example of a 360-degree view camera. And this one isn't here. This one happens to be in Healy, but it's one that I could find. And so you can see there with these 360-degree cameras that they're installing in other locations already, you get an actual 360. You can see from the images there, the top two images clearly stitched together right there in the middle. And if we could take those bottom two and move them up where our city logo is at there, you would see that those also stitch right into that. And if you wrapped it around, you would have a full 360-degree view. So a camera like that that also shows the approach and departure from each end of the runway through that 360-degree view, that's actually something that Aleutian helped us to identify as an operational limitation for them, especially in marginal weather. Not having a good view down the runway makes it very hard for them to make a go, no-go decision. So during this process of looking at different things, one of the things that came up was the possibility of an extension to the current runway. And the proposal would be to extend the runway, the approach end of runway 31, that's the Iliuliak Bay side, by 500 feet, and add 500 usable feet of runway extension, plus add the EMAS safety area, frangible concrete at the ends of that. I believe it's 150 feet of frangible concrete. Through that expansion, you would also have to extend the road around the end of the runway again and fill in some more area. But what Dennis has found is that there's broad support for that. The FAA is supportive of that. Alaska DOT and Public Facilities, who's the owner-operator of the airport, is supportive of that. Aleutian Airways is supportive of that. Senator Sullivan's office has been engaged. We're preparing to engage Murkowski's office on this as well. And we've even had some early talks with EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers, and both have indicated that they're likely to support that kind of an effort. A runway extension is one of the most impactful improvements that we can probably make here. And so on this slide, that as Carlin went to, I talk about some of the operational benefits of a 500-foot extension. For the current aircraft, the current provider with Aleutian, that extension would allow them an increased takeoff weight, an increased landing weight, more consistent full passenger loads, improved cargo capacity, better margins for their start-stop operations, and then that would ultimately lead to reduced cancellations and diversions. They are working for us on some specific data relative precisely to their aircraft. They're doing calculations to help us quantify exactly how much payload, whether they can reach full capacity, 90% capacity. They're working on that data for us, and that's pending. But ultimately, more payload and fewer restrictions means it's cheaper for them to operate and more efficient for them to operate in here with that same aircraft.
I was going to ask a question to Councilman Lubin, but
yeah, I was just curious that that goes awful close to Delta Western, and I'm wondering, has that been looked at too? Is that going to work?
None of the engineering has been done on this yet. It is something that is supported, and the engineering would have to prove that out. So there isn't a guarantee that this will happen. Just the fact that we have support from, in order to get any improvement like this, that one, the operator has to support it, and then two, the FAA has to support it. And if either of those don't happen, it's likely not to happen. And then the cost benefit of it, the wider that margin is, or the more it costs per person that's going to be serviced by it. Normally, DOT will and FAA will fund a 90-10 cost match. And we'll talk about possibility of a new runway, but that would not, for example, get a 90-10 match. This kind of a project is likely to get the 90-10 funding scenario.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, pretty much my same question. I mean, I remember this discussion regarding the extension of the runway almost 10 or 15 years ago. The study said it would happen only if the Delta Western and the Rocky Point area is some work is done to make it feasible. Mm-hmm. And it was the FAA that made that comment, so I'd be interested to see what changed since all that. Thanks.
Yep. So again, that extension improves safety margins and just helps the economics and reliability for the current providers. In addition to that, it provides some benefits for military and government aircraft. The Coast Guard C-130s fly in here. They're right on a, from what I understand, kind of a razor's edge on whether they can come in or not, and marginal weather can easily keep them from coming in here. It also, they come in weight restricted, and wet runway performance changes their ability to come in or how much load they can bring in with them. And then there's an aircraft called a C-40A that's used by the military for medium range transports. And that aircraft is essentially a 737-700 is what I believe it's based on. And with the military flights, they have a little more room in what they can do for weights and limits and restrictions on runways and lengths and all that. But this would improve their ability to come in more reliably. Next slide. So here's a question that I think you were asking, Councilmember Luby, about future aircraft. Indeed, Horizon Airlines did previously fly what is called a Dash 8-400 or a Q-400. That aircraft has 60 to 78 seats and much higher cargo capacity, and a 500-foot extension would enable that aircraft to come in here, that aircraft type, as well as a few other examples there of more modern turboprops. And those do all have the avionics necessary to fly that that instrument, that precision instrument approach. Unfortunately, Horizon and Alaska retired the Q-400 in January 2023, but there are a lot of those aircraft still out in the world being used globally, and production support is still there for all of their repair items. And I think I have it in here somewhere. Yeah, the last bullet down there. And de Havilland has signaled interest maybe in restarting a Dash 8 Q400 next gen program, which would potentially build a new similar capability aircraft. So yes, advanced turboprops, some of the ones listed up there, that's a big gain. By adding that 500-foot extension, it enables those type of aircraft to come in here. There's no guarantee that they will come here or that Aleutian will purchase them or someone else would bring them in. The point is that it makes the runway capable of it, which it isn't currently capable of right now. Before we go on, did you have anything to add to that, Dennis? Can you go back this way?
No, you've covered all the bases. You're right. You don't know what you can't get there if you can't get it there in the first place. That's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you. So next slide. So the next logical question that comes up is why not just relocate the runway or add a crosswind runway? Before I cover that, I think we don't have a super accurate cost estimate, but in Dennis's conversation with Alaska DOT, they estimated that extension cost to be maybe around $30 million. And if they're off, say even if you double it, that's $60 million. Relocating a runway or adding a crosswind is probably in the $400 to $500 million range, and much less likely to be funded. So very high cost. A lot of fill and blasting would be required to do some sort of like a crosswind runway on the far side of Ballyhoo or something like that. And even more, if we try to relocate it, there's not a lot of flat land around here to put a new airfield at. And then it comes down to the fact that because of that cost expense and the cost benefit, currently with the current data, FAA doesn't support it. Alaska DOT doesn't support that. Our state delegation probably wouldn't support that. And we would need all of those things in order to make that happen. The operational and economic realities here are that we have 25 to 30,000 emplanements per year, and that doesn't really
justify a new runway necessary to get jet service here. Next slide. Could it be justified in the future, jet service, the fishing industry, during our discussions with them, they definitely have an interest and believe that jet service might be needed. They do have large seasonal movements. They have fresh and frozen fish that they want to be able to ship out. And the current data doesn't show that because the capability doesn't exist. And so that's one of the reasons that they hired a contractor, and they're allowing them to work with Dennis and I as well on this. So the case could potentially be made in the future to show that jet service might be needed, but it is a very long shot just to keep expectations where they need to be. And in talking with the processors about this possibility for a 500-foot extension and the other aircraft that might allow to come in here, they seem to think that could make quite a difference for them if that were to come to fruition. So what's already happening? We have support from FAA, DOT, Alaska DOT to support a runway extension. Our senator and our legislative delegation is engaged, and we're giving them information. We have some weather data that we're looking at to more precisely define how many aircraft didn't come in on their scheduled flights and what this extension would, and weather cameras, how many of those could have come in otherwise if we had that change or that precision approach. We have been told that Aleutian has either just purchased or is in the process of purchasing an aircraft that does have the modern avionics that could fly that instrument approach. So more information to follow on that. And then Aleutian, as I mentioned, is going to provide us with performance data for their existing aircraft on what difference the 500-foot extension would make for them. We have replacement weather cameras funded. Fourth camera is under evaluation. We've engaged with the Army Corps and EPA early, and they seem supportive, at least initially. And we submitted that SCASDEP application that I talked about in order to get regional support and to build our case for funding support. Next slide. So the path forward, we're going to continue advanced runway extension planning. We would complete that avionics-based weather analysis to help provide justification. We'll get the validation on a fourth camera and a funding path for that. We'll get the data from Aleutian Airways on their performance data and incorporate that into our strategy. We'll continue our federal, state, and regional coordination and maintain that collaborative posture with Aleutian Air. Next slide. So in summary, the reliability improves the fastest through avionics improvements and a runway extension. That modern RNAVIG currently exists. We just need aircraft that can use it. A runway extension unlocks safety, more payload capacity, and other future aircraft operations. The replacement weather cams are funded and coming. A fourth camera is likely, but it's pending confirmation. Trident's economic data strengthens our case. Regional advocacy and SCASDEP is going to strengthen our position. And all the major agencies support this direction, and this is the most realistic, fundable path to better service. That is the last slide. If there's any questions for myself or Dennis, we'd be happy to try to answer.
Thank you for the council update on the Air Service Directive. Any questions from council on this reported update? Councilman Shastain, then Bell. Councilman Shastain, then Bell.
Sounds good. I wanted to say thank you. I appreciate it. During my time on council in the past and during my tenure with the city currently, thinking back, I don't recall as well a defined plan to fix what's been a part of every city election for the last 40 or 50 years. every city election we've had every year, the runway and the reliable flights out to Alaska has been brought up as a question, the campaign pledge, in some form or another. And this is the very first time that I recall ever saying something tangible. And it's coming from an interim city manager who's been here for about 4.5 to 5 months. This is the most progress I've seen. When I was elected to city council this last time, the former city manager was briefing me out on some of his ideas. And he'd been a city manager here for about 3 years and planning director for a number of years prior to that. And his great idea was to fill in the area between Ballyhoo and Hog Island, which, again, that goes back to that $500 million plan that is not really attainable. One of the things I appreciate that really stands out about this as well is that collaborative approach with industry. We already have, or you've already secured, commitments from industry to help fund the runway extension, or at a minimum, the study to determine what the best path forward is. And again, that's leveraging the resources that we have, because we're all in the same, effectively, the same airplane together. We look back to January, which kicked us off. And if we recall, the meeting we appointed Mr. Hogue, interim city manager, at that same meeting, I introduced a directive of the manager, which was approved by council, to fix this, fix our airline issues. And it was a very lofty directive. And what we're seeing right now, about 4.5 months later, is something tangible and a path forward. And I can't emphasize how much I appreciate this. And I'm hoping at the next election in October, this is not a fallacy. This is not a false campaign pledge, that we actually have more movement in a in creating reliable air service here. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilman Bell.
Yeah, thank you for this presentation and update. There are some big hurdles to some of these directions, you know, extending the runway and all that. We could talk at length for that all night long. But I will mention two things that I do see promising here and moving in a good direction is more of a long-term look and goals to identify the next aircraft. We all know the Saabs are old aircraft. They're not, you know, and they're not getting any younger, you know, as evidenced by, you know, how often there's a broken down Saab on the runway out here. You know, that's only going to become more of a reliability issue over time. So, you know, identifying the next aircraft and how we entice that operator to use that aircraft out here, or, you know, go through with the purchasing process. The other thing that I think is more is much closer and would have, you know, a benefit right now is focusing on the cameras. There's quite often where the local cameras, where one or more of them are inoperative or we don't have a view. And then looking at the region a little bit bigger, since we have Grant who operates out here, multiple charter companies that operate out here, having the cameras working here, but also over on Akun, Akutan. That one helps the smaller carriers like that. And kind of selfishly, general aviation, it is huge to have those cameras out there. It is a huge safety benefit. So just securing funds and then looking at other potential sites that give a good view of approaches, the runway, the weather in the general area, all those would be benefits. And that one, I think, is a low-hanging fruit where it's not a huge cost. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, do you mind going back a couple slides, maybe three? Right there. Support FAA and DOT support runway extension. I find that very interesting, because the last time we had this big conversation with the master plan, they said absolutely not. DOT did not support an extension. They supported, if you've seen the master plan, they've supported that little extra EMS or the
EMAS
sections for the safety margins, but absolutely no way that, according to their matrix, they can support extension of the runway for usable landing and takeoff area. And basically they said, our population's not big enough. I mean, they were very clear. So I don't know what has changed. I'm glad it's changed. But they said, nope, these are our check marks. These are the things we go by. And basically, you just don't qualify.
Dennis, is there anything that you can add to help kind of explain that change? And
Yes, I'm happy to. When it was first looked at, you're all familiar with the AIP program, which is what Abner was talking about, where the FAA will pay 90% out of federal funding, and the state comes up with another 10%. And at that time, that was being looked at through that lens, that the current AIP program would pay most of that cost. And if it's $30, $40, $50 million, that's almost the entire budget for the AIP program for the state for the year. And that means other airports would have to take a hit to give the Dutch Harbor Airport what it needs. But within the process of getting getting our legislature involved, some more behind the scenes, and not behind the scenes, but more direct conversations, and the approach that we're taking now, which is to add either separate funding or additional funding earmarked in the AIP program for the Unalaska Airport, the Dutch Harbor Airport. They're very much in favor of that. The head of airports for the state of Alaska very much embraces this project, if we can do so without impacting just the current slush fund of AIP. And that's part of the other thing why Abner's saying we're engaging, our legislature, is to get some extra money put into the AIP program that's earmarked for this project or some other funding process. So that's one of the things that's changed, is just a different approach in where the money comes from out of the federal. So that's something that's in progress. And I'm fairly confident that, you're giving the right. I had a chance in about a month ago to sit down and chat with Dan Sullivan about this. I've not had a chat with Lisa yet, and I'm communicating with his folks right now, looking for ways to find the extra. I'm not the one who's going to do it, but I'm certainly the squeaky wheel about finding some extra funding, perhaps through the AIP or whatever, to get this done. And that was really why DOT was pushing back, is it would wipe out their funds for all their other airport projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further questions or comments? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I just want to say that it's very encouraging news, something that we haven't heard for a long time in the whole community. You know, it's something that everybody, you know, would love to see something happen. And so I know we're just talking about it now, so I really hope that we can make something happen, and the whole community would be super happy if we could. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any Councilman Tungo?
Hi, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think we should concentrate on those cameras first. And this is a good, this is something to look good ahead of time. We always bring this whenever we do some lobbying about this airfare and runway in there, every time we go out there. But I know at one point this has been talked about before, but it did not even get somewhere because of the boat towards Delta Western in there. with the interference in there, but I can't wait to see the engineering be done on this and see what kind of, hopefully there's no interference in there. This is something we can look forward to. But first, I think the camera, the webcams are the best bet for us to be safe, and hopefully we can make it back and forth a lot easier in there in the future with those camera, because this is gonna be a long way, and I'm pretty sure if we bring bigger planes, we're gonna have a TSA in there. We need a bigger airport. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Any further questions? Comments? Okay, I appreciate the report. I think this is going to take a while. This, as we talked earlier today, we're looking, 10 years at the max? At max time of 10 years getting what this plan is talking about getting done. And it's going to take more money than what we're talking about by that time. But I support some kind of a change. I don't know if this is really going to be the one that's going to solve our problems. It's not going to be the one that's going to, you know, make Unalaska any more attractive, because the price is still the issue here. And, you know, we have no control of that as far as tickets, freight, everything else. Like to see a bigger plane that may cost, bring down some of the costs, but that the plane that's being disposed of, the, I forget the name of it, the larger one. Yeah, the 400 would be great to see that, the double capacity, double the weight, once this airstrip is put out. And I agree with Councilman Coleman that, you know, we've talked about this and we got a slap in the, like, you know, don't ask again, you'll never get an answer from us. Basically, they told us, don't come to this office and tell us you need an extension on the runway, because we won't do it. So it kind of leaves it on this community to put, work with industry, put together the money, and then go back to the state and say, okay, we've got our share, where's yours? Let's get it built. Let's not wait another 5 more years. We don't have that much time with what's going on and with Senator Sullivan pushing 90% of his time on ADAC. We've all said this before, and that is we support the military and their efforts at ADAC, but Unalaska is a place to build up rather than deal with ADAC. But he's very straightforward and says, no, I'm moving the military to ADAC. So we'll be a support area for them. And that's another line that we have to tell the story of Unalaska when we go and talk to Senator Sullivan, or when he shows up, makes an engagement and then the appointment to meet with us here, and then we don't see him again. Again, it's canceled out again this week, which is unfortunate. We'd like to have him look at this and work with our technical support, Dennis Parrish. Appreciate you being online and helping us through this process. So you had several years of experience in Aleutian, so that's great. You know what we're dealing with. You've flown out here. Appreciate your being part of the team. That's all I've got for now.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And, Abner, I stepped out of a dinner meeting for this, which I'm very happy to do so. If you're done with me, I'll go back to that. And if something comes up you need me for, just ping me on my phone and I'll call back.
Thank you, Dennis. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions for Abner on his, Earth Service Improvement Directive?
Mayor, we have questions from the folks who are participating remotely. We have two who made indication. First is Mr. Kelty, followed by Ms. Lottie Rowe.
Schulte. Is that who it was?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if you're taking a public comment on this topic, Mr. Mayor.
What? Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, Unalaska's runway is near and dear to my heart. When you started talking about 300 feet off the ground, 300 feet visibility to land, I don't think I want to be on that plane. But that's another story. But my comment was, and I didn't hear it brought up, was on what is the case for essential air service? And I don't know, before I know we didn't qualify because there was more than one carrier. But with the situation we're in now with such a high cost, if we don't qualify the way it's set up, is there any way to look at a waiver for essential air service? The flights now to St. Paul are like $400 each way. And that's a lot better than what, we have to pay to Unalaska. And it's not that much, and I think the mileage is just about the same. But that's with the Essential Air Service. If there is some way that we could get involved with that program or get a waiver, that would helpfully lower the cost for the traveling public out here in the industry as well. And maybe Abner can address that for me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Essential Air Service is something that we've evaluated and looked at. We actually, when we were back in D.C., we met with USDOT program manager for that program, for the Essential Air Service program. That's the person who actually makes the decisions in D.C. of how this works. And we were told that because we have air service, scheduled air service provided currently, we do not qualify. We are a qualified applicant because we were listed originally when the program was developed. But we cannot qualify to receive the service currently or receive that funding because we have service. The only way that we could get that service is to lose our air service. As you may recall, back in 2019, after the Penn Air accident, there was no air service here, and DOT did actually put out an RFP trying to find an essential air service provider for Dutch Harbor. They received two bids. Neither one was, I don't think, deemed responsive. And so there was no provision awarded. And then shortly thereafter, we started getting service again. But to our understanding from everything we've looked into and everyone we've talked to so far, there is not a waiver available, and we do not qualify for that funding currently.
Thank you very much. I think I agree with some of the comments I heard from the council members on what we can do in the near term. I think finding the funding for even 500 foot extension it would be a tough, but it's great to see what you're putting together, Mr. City Manager. I think it's a great step forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. And who's next?
Miss Lottie Rowe. Go ahead, Miss Rowe.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. I concur with you, and it's kind of exciting. Mr. Abner Hogue needs to let the gentleman know that the population doesn't fit what we're looking for, that they got to remind him to watch that movie. If you build it, they will come. The population will come. I'm kind of excited about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any more team or phone?
No, sir.
Comments? Okay. Thank you very much for all the input, City Clerk, as that finishes this comment submitted.
There were no comments submitted, sir.
Anyone in chambers wish to make comment? Yep.
Good evening, Council and folks in the hall here.
I would like to say after watching, this is one of my pet peeves. Of course, I think I've complained about it online and then amongst many people, and even council members have heard me complain about this at the service, the air service. But I am incredibly impressed that you got here in January and you have a, you've navigated all of the different partnerships and the pieces that are needed. And when I sat on council here 25 years ago, or however long it was, you know, we were down there lobbying Alaska Airlines with the council then. This is probably an even more impressive, especially in these hard times where funding is difficult. And starting with a multi facets of looking at this from many different angles and taking it one piece at a time, I just have to say thank you very much. Appreciate it as a city, a citizen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments. Anyone else in chambers? Okay, I request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
We make a motion to return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Chastain. Are there any objections to returning to regular session? Okay, hearing none, we're back in regular session at 7:26. PM. Thank you for the update, Ebner, and all the efforts. Working with the industries are key here. I think before they sat back and said, no, it's not our responsibility, but they charter planes. We'll save them a lot of money if they'd get involved and spend that money with us in getting an extension sooner than later. Okay, we are now in regular session. People wishing to speak on the regular agenda item must sign up with the city clerk. And signed up. Okay, first item on our regular agenda is adopt the findings of fact and conclusion of law, the appeal of a taxi permit transfer denial. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the findings of fact and conclusion of the law?
I move to adopt the findings of fact and conclusion of law.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Luby. I'll turn this over to the interim city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is an agenda item to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law based on the hearing that we held during the public hearing session at the last meeting. And just one note for council, the city attorney did advise us that on this agenda item specifically, only council members who attended and voted during that meeting for the hearing should participate in the discussion and the voting on this item.
Remind us who the were present.
All members were present except for Councilmember Bell. Councilmember Bell was not present.
Oh, Bell. Okay. Do you understand? Councilman Bell?
Just a clerical error. I am listed as being present during that in the findings of fact, and I'm not sure if that is just a clerical that we can be fixed, placing my name with Mr. Dungle.
Or yes, the clerk motion. Has provided, I believe, a handout with motion to amend, to make an amendment. Okay, sorry, there was no handout, but yes, anyone who can participate should make a motion. Someone who can participate should make a motion to strike Mr. Bell and replace it with Mr. Tungle.
I need a motion to amend this. Amend the motion to include Councilman Bell and replace with Councilman Tungle.
I move to amend paragraph 8 to strike the word Bell and replace it with Tungle.
Moved by Councilman Coleman.
Second.
Second by Councilman Longo. And the motion is to remove Councilman Tungle from the roll call and add Councilman Bell.
That's the other way around.
Sounds weird. Okay. Councilman Bell as being present and Councilman Tungle being absent.
No.
The other way around.
Uncle is
strike bell.
We'll move to Mr. Mayor. We'll move to strike Councilman Member Bell and replace it with Councilman Member Tungle.
All right. First time with backwards them. All right. The motion been made and seconded. Moved by Councilman Coleman and seconded by Councilman Luby.
Councilman Longo.
Longo. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Roll call, please, on the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Luby.
Yes.
Mr. Chastain.
Yes.
Mr. Longo.
Yes.
Mr. Tungle.
Yes.
Mr. Coleman. I'm sorry, Ms. Coleman.
Yes.
That's five. Move and roll call vote at 5-0. Motion carries, amendment passes. Now back to main motion, finding of fact and conclusion of law. Motion was made by Councilman Coleman and seconded by Councilman Longo for the main motion.
For the main motion, Mayor, it was seconded by Ms. Luby.
Thank you. One of you guys. Councilman. All right, you got it right. Coleman moved, Luby second.
Correct. Yes.
All right. Discussion. I'll turn this over to City Manager for introduction. And you.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This was just a document that the attorney reduced to writing the things that were discussed during that hearing and the vote of the council. And assuming that on review, you agree with those reduction to writing, you should pass this or adopt this finding of fact.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion by council on the motion? Back to finding and conclusion of law? None? City clerk, anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Thank you. I'll restate the motion to adopt the findings of fact and conclusion of law appeal for taxi permit and transfer of denial amended, which was amended. Request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Luby.
Yes.
Mr. Chastain.
Yes.
Mr. Longo.
Yes.
Ms. Coleman.
Yes.
Mr. Tungle.
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 5-0, the motion to adopt the finding of fact and conclusion of law has been approved. Next item B, Ordinance 2026-10, second reading, adopting the fiscal year 2027 operating and capital budget for City of Unalaska. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance 2026-10.
I make a motion to adopt Ordinance 2026-10.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby.
Councilman Longo, sir.
Seconded by Luby.
Luby, yes.
As I said, back to get it. Okay, I'll turn this over to City Manager for deductions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is the second reading for the FY27 operating and capital budget. Staff does not have anything further to add. You've had plenty of work sessions and a first reading at the last regular session, and staff recommends approval.
Okay, thank you. Is there any questions or council discussion or comments on the adopting the fiscal year 2027 operating and capital budget? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'll just make a quick comment. Every time we do this budget process, there's items that we don't necessarily all agree on here. Spending $9 million on, replacing roofs is kind of a big hit. And, you know, understanding that is necessary deferred maintenance that, you know, we need to get caught up on. And a little disappointed that we didn't address, you know, affordability issue through, you know, the mill rate, property taxes. But overall, this budget does take a big bite out of that deferred maintenance that, you know, we need to get caught up on. So I'll support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. And Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to look at the personnel budget a little bit better. And I was wondering if you could explain, how does the student internship work?
Are you referring to the internships that we moved under administration this year?
Yeah, and I noticed, you know, that you took internships out of other departments and moved them into, and I'm just not quite familiar on how it works. There's a, I have some questions on how you arrived at the budget for those.
We've had internships at different times over the years, and they've varied in location from department to department. And sometimes they're used in that department, and sometimes that department has no use for them, and another department does, and we've moved those around at different times. So this year, we decided to consolidate them under the administration department in order to provide ongoing visibility. So year after year, you'll be able to see the budget for those all together. It won't artificially inflate or deflate any single department's budget. And but they're a part-time position. We make an estimate on what we have for funding and what we think we might be able to use in order to provide an internship opportunity for those who are interested in the community. And it's kind of on a department by department basis, whether they want to use that or request to use that or not.
So having them under administration doesn't necessarily mean that they will work in the admin department?
No,
they
in fact.
Still work in another department?
They're still going to work in another department. In fact, most likely they will work in another department. We're just centralizing the budgeting for that under administration.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, that's good. I was just curious how the actual budget, the 15,600, they were all set at that. The other ones were a little bit different, and there's about a 50% increase in from over last year versus this year. Last year, the interns were around 10,400 for a quarter of a FTE. And so I'm just kind of curious of where does that number come from for that budget, if you have that answer. Sorry.
I'm going to ask the finance director, since he's online, if he can help enlighten us.
Sure, I can provide a brief response. In the past, the dollar amount has varied from department to department. And for the current year, we took just a more conservative approach in terms of what that dollar amount may look like. Typically, it does come in quite a bit less than what we've budgeted, and oftentimes there is grant funding associated with that. Possibly, you know, in the past, it's been through a PICTA, and so it does reduce the cost. The dollar amount is really just – it's an estimate based on where we're at currently, and we do – again, it is conservative.
Okay, so it's not actually tied to anything in code or anything then?
No.
Okay. And then I just had one other question. Something that I noticed was, and this again is under the admin budget, the administrative assistant 2 position, that decreased by about $25K over last year. And then I looked at the wage scale and code. It's actually below the minimum for the admin too. It looks like in code it says that the starting wage, the minimum is $77,000, and this one is now $58,000, and it was at last year it was at $83,000. So I'm just kind of curious what happened there. And if you look through the admin assistants on all the other departments, they're in line with our wage scale. So I'm just wondering if there's something abnormal there that I am not. I can address
that as well. The admin assistants 2 position in the FY26 budget, the individual that held that position has been transferred to the clerk's office and is replaced by another individual, and it is a typo. It should be admin assistant one in the admin department for the FY27 budget.
That makes more sense, because when I'm looking at the admin two, and it says any position, and I'm like, this isn't lining up, so I didn't know what happened there. So this is supposed to be an admin one in the admin department, not an admin two.
I do believe so, yes.
Okay.
And I will verify that, and the final budget that's published will include that adjustment.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that, and I think that was all the questions I had. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any further questions or comments on the budget? Okay. Next item is a council city clerk. Anyone signed up for public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
No one in chambers? Nope. I'll restate the motion. The motion is to adopt ordinance 2026-10, second reading, adopting the fiscal year 2027 operating capital budget for the city of Unalaska. Request a roll call vote.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Thank you. And with this vote, the council has adopted ordinance 2026-10, 6-0. Next item is resolution 2026-30, certifying the 2026 real and personal property tax rolls. I have a motion and a second to adopt the resolution 2026-30.
Move to adopt resolution 2026-30.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Longo. Turn this over to the city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city clerk is going to provide the introduction for you today.
Thank you. So council certification of the tax roll is one step in our property tax cycle each year, and it is required by our code of ordinances. So the certification of the tax roll is done following the appeal period and the Board of Equalization hearing, if there is one. This year, we didn't have one. So the total taxable real and personal property this year is $883,027,164, which is 3.88% increase over the last year's taxable value. At the mill rate of 10.5, and if we collect that at 100%, the city can expect to receive a property tax revenue of $9,271,785 for the fiscal year 2027. The staff memo contains additional information, but I'm happy to respond to council if you have any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion, questions, or comments on resolution 2026-30? Has anyone signed up to provide public comment, city clerk?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Okay, thank you. I request a roll call vote.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And with this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2026-30 with a vote of 6-0 in favor of the resolution. Next item, 15, council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives? If so, I need a motion and a second and a roll call vote. Directives? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 16, community input and announcements. Final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. Please come to the podium and state your name. Anybody in chambers? Anyone on the Zoom or telephone?
No one made an indication, sir.
Oh.
Thank you. Are there any further announcements?
Mr. Kelty, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say congratulations to the Unalaska High School graduates of 2026. I always thank you to KUCB for I got to watch it. That was always a good part of being a city and school board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate your comments, and congratulations also to the graduating students of Unalaska. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are adjourned at
7:46.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Good night.